cell phones and brain cancer, babies and skin cancer, and using cell phones to fight malaria. Plus, we're going to take a look at what is malaria coming up in this episode. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome you all to the program this week. We have a lot going on in this episode, our news segments, and of course our tip of the week coming up here in just a bit. But I do want to remind you of a few things. Make sure you head over and check out the additional information and resources available over at nursingshow.com. There are links to all of the news articles, as well as always additional resource links for each week's tip of the week or interview segment. So you want to make sure you follow up on those resources. Find them over there in the show notes. And again, that's at nursingshow.com. If you'd like to get back in touch with me, leave a comment, a question, maybe I made a mistake and you want me to correct something. I'm not perfect, folks, and I want you to be part of this community effort here. If I say something wrong or I need to add an addendum to something I've discussed, please get in touch with me. You can leave a comment over on the website. Whenever you do that, it sends me an email so I can get an email that way. You can email me directly, too, at nursingshow@gmail.com. Send those emails in. I love to hear from you, and I work really hard to respond back to every email. If you leave a comment, I do respond back over on the comments as well. So leave a comment over on the website, and I can respond back there. Maybe we can get a little bit of a discussion set up. If you'd like to get back in touch with me via Twitter or Facebook, you can find me there under the handle PodMedic, so twitter.com/PodMedic or facebook.com/PodMedic. And don't forget to check out the Nursing Show fan page. We're over 1,000 fans, pushing for 1,500 now, folks. Maybe we can hit that number before the end of the summer. If you haven't already gone over there and liked the fan page and followed us over there, go to facebook.com/nursingshow. Click the like button at the top of the page. I post links to interesting articles, things that may not make it into the show or onto the website, but I post the links there for the Facebook fans, as well as sometimes some preview videos, some extra segments, and you can find all of those over at the Nursing Show fan page on Facebook. So check it out over there at facebook.com/nursingshow. Let's jump on in to our news segment here coming right up. It's time for the news, and we'll start off with a news segment on the correlation between brain cancer and cell phone use, which, of course, seems to be no correlation, which is interesting because the World Health Organization recently added cell phones to a list of possible carcinogens. I'm not sure why they did that, but based on research and looking at numbers, it seems that there is no correlation between increased use of cell phones and brain cancer. This something that came out early in the advent of cell phone technology, early in the days before everyone had cell phones, only business people had cell phones. This is back in the late 80s. And there was a blip where we were seeing an increase in brain cancer rates. And it was proposed, hey, maybe this is due to the use of cell phones, that maybe we're seeing an increase in brain cancer incidences because of cell phone use. However, since then, I think no one would argue with the fact that we have certainly started using cell phones even more. So, and in fact, it says there's a 500-fold increase in the use of cell phones since that was originally discussed back in the 80s. And here we are 20 years later, and what do we have but declined brain cancer rates? That's right. While cell phone use has gone up 500-fold, brain cancer rates have continued to decrease in that time frame. So there doesn't appear to be any correlation between cell phones and brain cancer because we're using them more. It's been pointed out time and again, the energy in an average cell phone is very, very low energy, low energy waves, nothing compared to the cosmic bombardment that you get just living on the Earth. You get a lot more radiation from coming in from around us in outer space that's more high energy than the low energy radiation associated with cell phones. And it seems to be, this is pointing out that that is the case. Not sure why the World Health Organization went ahead and put out there that cell phones might be a carcinogen, unless, of course, people are eating their cell phones or, you know, drinking the battery juice or something. I don't know. But certainly, this particular study, looking at cell phone use increase and brain cancer incidence decreasing over a 20-year time frame, certainly seems to say that there is not any direct correlation between cell phones and brain cancer. And it just goes to point out how really vital it is that we as healthcare professionals are reading these types of news stories and making sure that we have the correct information to apply to giving our patients good educational information. And I point out that, you know, there are correlational studies all the time that really don't have any basis. You know, they might say, well, look, this happens, so therefore this happens. You know, it's not necessarily the case. And so we need to look more carefully what else might be going on. We're decreasing brain cancer rates in the U.S., but certainly it seems with such a marked rise in cell phone use in the same time frame that it isn't related to cell phones. So I think we can put that one to bed, but it's certainly something to keep in mind. Let's move from brain cancer to skin cancer. Talking about being bombarded with radiation, think about the sun. You know, a lot of us are really big proponents of using sunscreen, and I'm just crazy religious about it because I just I come from a family of redheads, and I don't burn. You know, I don't tan. I freckle, or at worst, burn. So when you go to the beach with my family, I'm the guy tucked up underneath the umbrella with sunscreen all over me, and I still burn from the reflected sunlight off of the sand. So that's just the way I go to the beach. However, what about other people? How active are we in promoting sunscreen use in our patients, especially our patients that are at greater risk? There's an article here about a study released on infants or toddlers, children under the age of 2, at much greater risk for increased skin damage because their skin has not developed the additional protective layers that you get as an adult. And so even minor, seemingly minor skin exposure to direct sunlight, 15 or 20 minutes, can cause irreparable skin damage to these young children. So it is more important to use sunscreen in these individuals. Now, this study, in full disclosure, and I think it's good they did this, they put this right in the article, in full disclosure, Johnson & Johnson did fund the study and the authors of this study, and they make baby sunscreen products. So, okay, I get it. It doesn't bother me when companies are doing studies that have to do directly with their products, only because I would expect them to do studies directly with their products. You know, I actually pay attention to and help out with studies and surveys about podcasting. What's wrong with that? I need to know what's going on with my particular business industry. There's no difference there. I think as long as there's full disclosure and the results and the methodology associated with the studies are appropriate, that there's not a problem, as long as we're making sure that it's scrutinized and that there is peer review involved. So, that said, there is a real important, it's really important to make sure that we don't do damage to these deep cells in the skin. And since in infants and toddlers, those deep cells aren't so deep, these can lead to early melanoma development in these children. So, you know, there might be 80-year-olds out there developing skin cancer from 80 years of sun exposure. And yeah, okay, that happens. But you could imagine what would happen if the same person developed that same skin cancer at the age of 30. It's devastating. So we need to be proactive. We need to make sure that we're educating our patient population. And when the seasons change, we need to talk to them about things that go along with those seasonal changes. We should be talking to all of our patients, young, old, or middle, and saying to them, Do you use sunscreen? Are you aware of the resources and what you need to do and how sunscreen works? A little bit of patient education goes a long way, and this is one of those prevention issues that I think really just falls squarely in the realm of good, high-quality nursing patient interrelation and education. Finally, a great article on the use of mobile technologies and mobile healthcare. Hewlett-Packard, which I think of primarily Hewlett-Packard as a printer manufacturer. If you look on the shelf up here, you'll actually see a printer right next to me. But it is also a manufacturer. They bought the Palm manufacturer, the Palm company. So they are now manufacturing, or at least owning the company that manufactures Palm cell phone devices and things. And they are working with a group of researchers in Africa. And let me just make sure I get this right, because they are in, looking at the article, Botswana. They're looking at a clinical trial to get Palm Pre smartphones and a special application that was designed by the researchers into the hands of physicians and healthcare workers in Botswana to track malaria outbreaks, and then send that information back to a central location where it can be documented and tracked, so that if there's a big malaria outbreak, it can be dealt with quickly before it becomes even more widespread. Anyone who's studied malaria or looked at it, it's one of those diseases that is very high on the radar in the world population. Not so much here in the U.S., but elsewhere in the world, responsible for millions of deaths and just a lot of illness and a lot of problems. So people with malaria, are combating this. And of course, the at-risk populations, the very young and the very old, are particularly at risk to this particular infection. So we need to go ahead and do what we can to support these things. And I like to see Hewlett-Packard and others coming up with novel ways and using technology in places where you might not think of using technology, like using smartphones in parts of Africa. And I know several people that go to Africa on a regular basis, and they didn't ever lay the copper wire under the ground like we did for our phone system. They just put towers up. So actually, cell phone coverage in most of the settled parts of Africa isn't so bad, and it's really the only way they communicate is through using cell phones. They don't have the traditional wired phone, except only in the urban centers. So it's actually more prevalent than you might think. And so smartphones and applications and mobile healthcare really is going to be a vital part of providing high quality healthcare in those areas moving forward. So we'll have to look at that and continue to follow up on these types of articles moving forward here. If you have a comment about this or any of the other articles that we talked about in the news, I urge you to send those comments in. You can email me at nursingshow@gmail.com, or go ahead and check in and leave a comment right on the show notes for this episode. Let me know what you think of these articles, or perhaps share your thoughts or ideas on what we talked about in the show. So for this week's tip of the week, I thought we would talk about malaria. It's not something I think we've actually covered here on the show before, except perhaps as part of a news article like we did just a second ago in the news. But I think it's important that we look at these types of world and global illnesses. As people travel more and more, as we see, the world gets to be a smaller place. And so we are going to see patients with illnesses come to us that may not be something we're used to seeing. And with something like malaria being as prevalent as it is worldwide, it is something you need to be aware of and think about. So we're going to just do a brief overview of malaria. First of all, its disease and epidemic proportions, according to CDC and World Health Organization information. And then we'll come and revisit just exactly what it is as far as the parasite, and also exactly signs and symptoms and treatments to be expected for patients that contract malaria. So we'll talk about that coming up right now. So for this week's tip of the week, we're going to go ahead and look at malaria and review some things. It's not a very common illness in the developed parts of the world, but it is the number one vector-borne killer in the world. It is affecting 100 million 200 million, 300 million people, depending on whose numbers you look at. And it's certainly something that should be on the forefront of our minds in any version of healthcare and awareness. And it's something that is, I think, something that we need to be more aware of in the community as a whole, as the healthcare community in a worldwide basis. We're going to do a couple of things in this particular review. We'll look at United States and global malaria statistics. We'll look at causes, risk factors, and transmission. Of course, a lot of you already know routes of transmission and things like that. But there's some interesting things going on with the malaria causes and the particular organism parasite that causes the disease called malaria. Signs and symptoms to look for, diagnostic tools and tips. We'll also look at treatments that are common, and as always, wrap up with nursing considerations. What can you do if you have a patient that has contracted malaria? And as people travel at this time of year, it's something that you could come in contact with. Or if you're a nurse that's traveling to do volunteer work or mission work or whatever the case may be, as part of your individual personal outreach as a healthcare professional, you may come in contact or go to areas where malaria is much more common than where you work right now. So we want to make sure that we keep track of these basic nursing interventions, things that we can do to help our patients not only get better, but also be more comfortable while they're getting better. Let's talk a little bit about the global impact of malaria. 200 million to 300 million cases reported in 2008. The most recent statistics I've been able to find from the CDC or the World Health Organization are updated through 2008. There's some reports and things that have been released since then, but these are the most broad, widespread numbers, and there certainly hasn't been a significant decrease since then. It's still a huge issue. We need to continue to think about this. What does that mean in terms of lives? Well, out of that, up to half of those people that contract malaria can result in a fatality. 100 million deaths reported in 2008 related to malaria. Most of those, the very young in sub-Saharan Africa. And these are at-risk people in at-risk communities, and they don't have access to even the most basic healthcare resources in many cases. And so they end up dying from a preventable, treatable illness. And this is something we need to be much more aware of. In the United States, we look at 1,500 cases in the U.S. per year. Of course, because of a more advanced healthcare system, the cases are much less likely to result in death. But people with comorbid factors, other immune compromise, and risk factors can be at greater risk for complications, side effects, and death, even in an advanced, more advanced medical community. So we need to be aware and keep our eyes open. And 1,500 U.S. cases a year, if you are in an area that is international access and lots of travelers, you may be very well coming in contact with some of these patients as they travel to and from the United States. Most of the U.S. cases do involve travelers from Africa, primarily sub-Saharan Africa and portions of Asia. So it's just something to be aware of and keep in mind. The causes of malaria, most of you know it's as the most deadly vector-borne disease. Again, that disease caused by parasitic protozoa infection, and it's four different, primarily in the human population, four specific species in the Plasmodium genus. I'm going to try to not butcher these names too badly, but Plasmodium falciparum, Plasmodium vivax, Plasmodium malariae, and Plasmodium ovale. And these are the four most common human causes of disease. There are 10 or more of these 200 species in the Plasmodium genus that are thought to be carriers of malaria. And so when you think about this, you need to also keep in mind that there are animal-borne malarias. Primates are susceptible to malaria. So in parts of the world where they have a lot of primate population, there is possibilities for a mutation of one of the other varieties to reach a form that can more readily infect humans. So we need to be on the watch for those types of animal-based strains as well. Transmission is exclusively through the Anopheles mosquito, And these mosquitoes, varieties of them, will target different populations. So there may be mosquitoes that are primarily infecting other primates. There are others that feed almost exclusively on humans. And it is this transmission, this vector, that causes the transmission of the parasite from one person's bloodstream to the next. It's ingested in larval form by the mosquito. It grows to maturity over several weeks. And then when they go to drink from another host, they will inject through their saliva back into that host's bloodstream infection, infected parasites, and they go ahead and move through the body. Things can affect transmission rates and how virulent this can be. So you might not always get infected. Of course, we understand that there has to be a certain levels reached of the infection levels in the initial attack or initial assault on the body to actually cause an infection. Many things can affect that. The different varieties of parasites of those four, some are more virulent than others, some are more often fatal than others because of the ways that they affect and are multiplying within the body. Health of the host, as well as immunity. And this is one of the reasons why the very young are so at risk in sub-Saharan Africa. Over years and years of exposure, continuous exposure, they get malaria, they get over it, they get malaria, they get over it. Over time, the adults develop immunity. And so often you'll find adults that have been exposed over a lifetime to be virtually immune to many of the local varieties of malaria. However, that's not saying that they won't get it. Other things can affect that, and their general health is part of it. The vector, mosquitoes. Is the mosquito more likely to have fed on a human recently or a primate recently? So if you're in a high population area, then you're more likely to have a mosquito that's fed on a human host, and more likely, if that area has a malaria outbreak going on, to be infected in that situation. Also, environmental factors all have part of it. Anything that can affect the life cycle of the mosquito will affect the possibility of spreading this disorder. And this includes environmental factors like humidity, temperature, recent rain. There's a whole host of prevention factors that go into play with dealing with standing water, treatments with pesticides, and things like that. So all of these things can indeed make a huge difference when we're looking at the different levels of transmission. Signs and symptoms. This is one of those things that if you're not used to seeing malaria, if you're in an area where you don't often encounter malaria, you may think it's disguised or it's something else entirely. Acute febrile illness is the way this is described. It can be mild or severe, so it can be a mild fever and flu-like symptoms. And of course, mild signs and symptoms that mimic the flu are going to be easily dismissed. In fact, people may not even report it, may not even come to see a healthcare professional, and they could go on to cause an outbreak in a region that is less protected or in individuals that are at higher risk. And so this is something that's important to keep track of. Common signs and symptoms include fever, chills, sweats, headache, muscle pain, nausea and vomiting, general tiredness, malaise. You also, in more severe symptoms, can have patients experiencing confusion, including focal neurodeficits. They may also have severe anemia, respiratory distress, and may even go into coma. And this is because, in some cases, the infection is more likely in some varieties to lodge in the brain or cause other disorders that cause additional factors and problems. You can have patients that experience severe acid-base disruptions. So there's a lot of different problems that can occur in more severe assaults. And of course, anemia is an issue all unto itself as the widespread hemolysis occurs related to the infection of the blood cells. This disease has been called Blackwater fever. And the reason for that is because of this hemolysis. The widespread breakdown of the red blood cells actually causes a darkening of the urine as the blood byproducts, the red blood cell byproducts, are flushed from the system. And so this is something that may be a sign or a symptom that may show up in somebody with a more severe and advanced case. And just something to keep in mind as you might get that little piece of trivia passed along. Or you may be in a situation where you don't have other advanced diagnostic techniques. If you're on a trip or traveling, wondering what the causes are and don't have access to other resources, this may be a diagnostic tool. What about other diagnostic tools for malaria? Some of them are non-specific for specific signs and symptoms. Because of that fact, because of these flu-like symptoms that could be so many other things, including any viral infection that could happen out there in the course of a person's interactions, we need to make sure that we're looking at other diagnostic tools that may be needed. History of travel to high-risk area. If you're in any kind of developed area of the world and you have somebody with any kind of flu-like symptoms, one of the questions you should always ask is, have they been traveling recently and where? Not just because of malaria, but because of any other host of other diseases and disorders out there that can help narrow down specifically what kind of infection's going on. So always get a good history with these patients. Lab test for the specific parasites. This would be a blood smear where we're going to actually go in and identify the specific parasites in the blood under a microscope. Severity of the disorder will be determined by other tests. And so if you haven't done a lab smear, or if you're in an area where, heck, when's the last time your lab technician in your hospital actually even took a look and knows what malaria looks like? So you're going to need to maybe get an inkling or go down a certain path based on other signs and symptoms and tests. And these include anemia. So you'd be doing a CBC, blood sugar tests, the organisms, as well as the fever, and later on, some of the treatments and medications all may cause hypoglycemia. So blood sugar changes may be an indication. You want to follow and look for liver and kidney function deficits that may show signs of renal failure or liver failure. So the BUN, creatinine, the glomerular filtration rate, the GFR, bilirubin, acid-base imbalances, so your pH and your bicarb, all these things you're going to go ahead and look for in lab testing. There are antigen test kits for specific versions or specific infections and parasites, but they may not be available in all regions. I mean, heck, in the United States, there are 1,500 cases in the course of a year. Is it really likely that your lab will even carry the proper kit? And so it may be sent to specialty lab centers. So diagnosis or specific diagnosis using one of these antigen test kits may be delayed, whereas they might be more readily available in parts of the world where they expect to see malaria crop up. So it's something to keep in mind. But there are specific antigen test kits out there. And we're going to go ahead and close off part one. This segment became a lot longer as I started adding more detail to it, but I think it needs to be covered in the depth that I've put together here. So we're going to do a two-parter here for the malaria review, and we'll pick up with part two of this segment when we talk about specific treatments for malaria in our next episode. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody to check out this week's Nursing Show show notes over at nursingshow.com. It's important for you to do that because there's always links to all the news articles, but also additional resource links that go with the weekly tips or interviews. And it is really important that you follow up on that additional information. I mean, think about it. I can give you a brief overview here, 10 or 15 minutes of a topic, but that really doesn't give you the in-depth information you need to apply to your practice. It's really meant to be a review of information. And that's why I always make sure to provide you links where you can find tons of additional resources at high-quality sites like the Centers for Disease Control and other educational settings, research links, journal articles for nurses. All of that information provided for you so that you can follow up and apply it as appropriate to your own scope of practice. So make sure you do that. If you have any comments or questions for me, a suggestion, perhaps you need to get me to make a correction. I make mistakes all the time. Heck, I'm human. So go ahead and send those emails in. You can reach me at nursingshow@gmail.com. You can also catch up with me. Just leave a comment on any of the articles over on the Nursing Show site. Share your thoughts there. I love to get comments over there, and it doesn't happen so often anymore. So head over and just leave a comment. Let me know what you think of the show or of the article of that particular episode, whatever the case may be. go over to nursingshow.com and leave a comment. It sends me an email automatically, and then I can come back and leave a comment back to you on the website, and it can start a nice little discussion. If you want to reach me on Facebook or Twitter, I'm available under the handle Podmedic. Podmedic, twitter.com/podmedic, facebook.com/podmedic, and The Nursing Show, still growing and going strong on the fan page there. So if you haven't already become a fan, or you know someone who hasn't, go ahead and share The Nursing Show fan page. You can find that at facebook.com/nursingshow. And just click the like button at the top of the page. And again, if you've already become a fan, you know, it's really easy to share the Nursing Show fan page on your page on Facebook, to share that link and let folks you know, other nurses and friends, what's going on at the Nursing Show page. And I post other links to things that come up during the week, things that don't make it into the show but are interesting articles, other sites, other fan pages on Facebook I think you might like, all available for you over at facebook.com/nursingshow. We're going to go ahead and wrap up now with our weekly song of the week. We've got our good friend Matthew Ebel coming back. Matthew Ebel's music, we've played him here a lot, and this is one of my favorite songs of his, Downtown. If you like what you hear, you can let him know you heard it here on The Nursing Show, and you can find more of his songs over at his website, MatthewEbel.com, that's E-B-E-L, or you can go and catch his music in places like the iTunes store, and you'll find that by going to the iTunes link in the show notes, or just going over to iTunes and searching for Matthew Ebel. That's it for me. I'm going to be back again soon with another episode here of The Nursing Show. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care. The future past the end of a nose.
better sell, or your daddy gonna raise hell. He gives you money, but honey, your daddy don't give a damn unless you got a Johnny.